Thanks for listening to this week's Lefevre CFC podcast. Connect with us via our website, lefevrecfc.com, or our Facebook page, www.facebook.com/lefevrecfc. We hope you enjoy this week's message.
During COVID, because we weren't getting to see family as much as what we used to, we took the opportunity in our home to read stories to our nieces and nephews and put them through Messenger so that they could hear us reading to them. And I called it Uncle Hayden's Story Time. And so we'd tell stories, usually completely nonsensical stories that my kids thought were funny, and I have no idea if anyone else did, but we told stories. And so this is Uncle Hayden's Story Time, okay? Uncle Hayden's Story Time. You ready for it? You're looking like you've got anticipation. That's good. Okay. I've probably built it up just way too much right now, okay? Once upon a time. I think I should stand here, sorry. Once upon a time, there was a man who became a king. Now, this man became a king because his father was a king. And he was the king of actually quite a small nation, but a wealthy nation at this point in time. And over his reign, he had the opportunity to build some amazing buildings and gather huge amounts of wealth into his community. Fairly early on in this king's reign, when he was having a sleep, he dreamed that God came to him and he had a conversation with God. And God said to him, "What would you like?" And he basically said, "My father was a great king and he knew how to rule, but I'm just young and I've got no idea what to do. And all of these people around me in this kingdom need a leader who can discern, who knows what's right and wrong, what's good and bad." Yeah. He said, "So please, would you give me discernment?" And God said to this man, "Well, because you didn't ask for wealth or to have your enemies vanquished, but instead you asked for wisdom, I'll give you that. And I'll give you wisdom. And I'll give you wealth, and I'll give you a long life, and for generations to come, your children will sit on the throne of Israel." Okay, so it's interesting, isn't it, that in the dream, a man asks for wisdom, but in itself to ask for wisdom is wise, isn't it? I always found that interesting, that there's already a seed given by God for this person before they even asked for something. And yet they knew they needed more of what they already had. So I'm hoping most people knew we were talking about Solomon then. You guys heard of Solomon? Cool. I'm just start thinking about it because I'm going to ask a question in a minute. So not your nephew, no. Different Solomon. So Solomon was a wise man, but not because he read books, although I'm sure he did, but because God gave him wisdom. Right. Tell me, who can tell me? You can tell me the story, Isaac, couldn't you? Tell me about the sword. Can you tell me about the sword? Who can tell me about the sword? Sword and Solomon? It's a gruesome story. Do you know the story? No? There's a story about Solomon and a sword. Excellent. So this is a known story for when it was sort of displaying Solomon's wisdom.
The one baby and two mothers, or one claimed to be the mother when the other was.
Yep, so there was two women who lived together and they both had babies. One of the babies died and then they were both fighting over whose baby it was and they came to King Solomon. And then, do you know what happened then?
One of them wanted the baby to be like...
Yeah, that's the gruesome part. So they're fighting, aren't they? And then Solomon goes, all right, how are we going to work this out? So he says, you know what? Seeing as you're fighting over the baby, just get a sword, cut the baby in half, you can have half each. Do you reckon Solomon really meant it? What do you think would happen if there's two women fighting over a baby and he says, I'm just going to cut the baby in half, you can have heads or tails, right? What do you think is going to happen?
The real mother would rather it live with the one who isn't the real mother but claims to be.
Yeah, exactly. So one of them had true love. One of them just wanted the baby. All right, so these were women in a time or an era where if you didn't have a son, you probably didn't have a very bright future. So they wanted a son. Thank you so much. That was wonderful. Top marks. You get the Mars bar that I don't have. Excellent. So there was wisdom. What was interesting about that story, I think, is that we learned something about love as well, what love really is, yeah? We get to find out that love... It's all right. So good. There was feedback there for a minute, wasn't there? We found out something about love as well. We found out that true love is not for yourself, it's for somebody else, isn't it? So a mother who truly loves the child is more caring about the child's future than their own. They're willing to give that up in order for the child to have a future. So there's something... Solomon then understood something more than just wise. He understood something of the heart. We'll come back to this in a minute. But it's a really important point. So it says that Solomon had understanding greater than any other man before him or any other man after him, which probably just means there was a stack of women smarter than him. But, you know, he was a very smart man. And he knew of the cedars of Lebanon and the hyssop growing out of the walls. They were obviously things that were meant something in particular. But he knew of the cedars. So he knew of plants. So I actually always had a bit of a heart after Solomon because I like science. And this guy seemed like a science guy to me. He knew of the birds of the air. I told you it was a beautiful picture. Mm-mm. The reptiles and of the fish of the sea. But I just, that's how I imagine fish of the sea. So if I have the Atlantic salmon later on, fish of the day, fish of the sea, fish of the day. Good point. So I'm not certain if he was a culinary expert as well, but that's how I imagine fish of the sea. That's Atlantic salmon. Tastes very good if you haven't had it before. Okay. So with this knowledge, Solomon actually did a whole heap of writing. So we're doing a whole series at the moment on biblical or Old Testament heroes, right? So he's a hero of mine. But later in life, I mean, I always thought Solomon was pretty clever and I enjoyed the story of Solomon, but it hasn't been until much later in life that I've really started to read Proverbs, Song of Solomon, well, I read that when I was younger, to be fair, and Ecclesiastes, and really started to understand what's going on, or at least get a grasp of it. But if, for all the younger people in the room, it can feel a bit weird sometimes, but if you can read Proverbs and get some of it, it will mean a lot to you, I promise you. So the thing about Proverbs is, you know, we're in the New Testament era, so a lot of our focus is on what did Jesus do for me to be reconciled back with the Father, and then I get to go to heaven, right? And there's nothing wrong with that. Clearly, there's something amazing about that, and that's what we're here to celebrate. But this is about another part of life, which is also really important, which is how do we live well now? How do we make decisions that mean that life is good for us and life is good for the people around us? So that's what Proverbs is basically all about. So I've got just a couple of samples for you that I'm hoping will whet your appetite. When wisdom enters your heart and knowledge is pleasant to your soul, discretion will preserve you, understanding will keep you, to deliver you from the way of evil, from the man who speaks perverse things, from those who leave the paths of uprightness to walk in the ways of darkness. Do not envy the oppressor and choose none of his ways, for the perverse person is an abomination to the Lord, but his secret counsel is with the upright. That's what makes God's secret counsel. His wisdom is for us who live well. The curse of the Lord is on the house of the wicked, but he blesses the home of the just. Surely he scorns the scornful, but gives grace to the humble. The wise shall inherit glory, but shame will be the legacy of fools. What does it feel like to be shameful? What does that mean? Have you experienced shame? I've experienced shame. Have you? No? You experienced shame?
I have.
Have you missed a shot in basketball?
Yes.
How'd you feel?
Shameful.
Yeah. As you should. No, don't. That's fine. That's part of learning. But often when we make mistakes, we feel shame. When I was growing up, there was a really popular word or two words put together, shame job. Shame job. Okay, it's just shame job. They were powerful words because it actually talked about the emotional state that somebody was in when they made a mess of their life, when they did something wrong. And shame robs us of glory and robs us of who God has made us to be. The interesting thing here is it says shame follows the fool. It's interesting. Why is that? Maybe because the fool does things that deserve shame, maybe in part, but maybe because only a fool, in our understanding now, would be shameful. Get that? Why would we have shame? I think back here it's talking about the fact that shame does come after being foolish, but I think in Christ part of what we should know is that we are a fool to feel shame. But to be wise would be to know that we are existing inside the Father's heart through Christ. That would be wisdom, and we would be therefore inheriting glory always. Wisdom is the principal thing, the main thing, all right? Therefore, get wisdom, and in all you're getting, get understanding. Exalt her. Interesting, wisdom is called female, by the way, all the way through Proverbs. And she will promote you. She will bring you honour when you embrace her. She will place on your head an ornament of grace, a crown of glory she will deliver to you. So I'm hoping, this may need a tiny bit of moving around, but I was hoping that people might know something special in their hearts that you know helps you in life, that you might be able to share with somebody around you now. So we've got a whole bunch of young people here who know cool stuff, but you know the older people have probably learnt a lot of things that could be valuable. So I would ask that if there's anyone out here that would feel like coming and mixing with some of the youngers and youngers with some of the olders, there might be an opportunity for us to hear from each other about wisdom. Just some small things that you might have learnt about life where you go, particularly for the older people, I wish I knew that when I was 15, or I wish I knew that when I was 10. Or now it might be just sharing and going, do you know what I've just recently discovered? Yeah, something like that. I'm going to share one with you, and this is really important, perhaps just slightly lighthearted, that a wise man once said to me. He said, Hayden, when you get a girlfriend... No, it wasn't my dad. This was a man named Kevin. He said to me, when you get a girlfriend, have a really good look at his mother. Because in 25 years, that's who you're going to be married to. Her mother. So what did I say? I don't want to look at his mother. I actually never met his mother, so I ruined that, didn't I? When you get a girlfriend, have a really good look. When you get a girlfriend, have a look at her mother. Because in 25 years, that's who you will be with. Make sure you like what you see. Which was really good because I love the look of Bianca's mother, so I did very much. But that was just a little bit of wisdom. People get old, so make sure you pick someone you like the look of. That's important for a man, okay? All right. Maybe not the deepest bit of wisdom, but it was an important one. Okay. So can I ask people to move around a little bit? Hopefully you'll have something deeper than that you can share with each other. Get up. Everyone stand and then move slightly. People that I can see, there's enough wisdom to fill up 24 hours of conversation, but we're going to come back into your chairs now. All right. Thank you, everyone. All right, I've got a few more words because Solomon wrote more than one book, so we just went through Proverbs. Whoa. Went through more than Proverbs. There we go. All right. He also wrote a book called Preacher. But if you open up your Bible, you won't see the word preacher as the title of a book. You'll see the title called Ecclesiastes, which means preacher. Okay? So if you've ever wondered what it means, that's what it means. It means preacher. And the preacher in this case was Solomon himself. There's a couple of words that are used over and over again in Preacher, in Ecclesiastes. It's vanity under the sun. Can anyone tell me what vanity means? Yeah, being vain. What does being vain mean? Don't know. Thinking yourself, yeah, thinking a bit too much of yourself. Yep, that's one way. Particularly often thinks of like looks is often how it is, you know. Oh, you know, gosh, I look really good sort of stuff. And? Self-absorbed, yep. If you're vain, you're definitely going to be self-absorbed because you're thinking about your own performance or your own looks or your own whatever. Sorry? No, I heard that. That's a up yourself, sure. Yep, definitely. And that's the other thing about vanity. Also can just mean worthless, sort of a secondary meaning to the same word. So when it says vanity under the sun, it's sort of saying things that are not as valuable as you thought they were about the world, not just about you, okay? So let's have a quick look at some of it. I've got to step back over here. All right. Vanity of vanities, says the preacher. Vanity of vanities, all is vanity. Now, if you start reading Ecclesiastes, just be prepared, it's a little depressing to begin with until you realise where he gets to, all right? What profit is a man from all of his labour in which he toils under the sun? One generation passes away, another generation comes, but the earth abides forever. The sun also rises and the sun goes down and hastens to the place that it arose. The wind goes toward the south and turns around to the north. The wind whirls about continually and comes again on its own circuit. All the rivers run into the sea, yet the sea is not full. To the place from which the rivers come, there they return again. He's speaking of evaporation, by the way. Anyone interested in science? Okay. All things are full of labour. Man cannot express it. The eye is not satisfied with seeing, nor the ear filled with hearing. That which has been is what will be. That which is done is what will be done. And there's nothing new under the sun. I reckon you would have heard that one before. Is there anything of which it may be said, see, this is new? And he doesn't mean the new iPhone, okay, by the way. It has already been in ancient times before us. There's no remembrance of former things, nor will there be any remembrance of things that are to come by those who will come after. So this could feel a little depressing, right? Then no one's going to even remember me eventually. Reality is it's unlikely any of us are going to be remembered a few generations from now, and what a wonderful thing that is. Because if I was remembered for everything I did, I don't really want everyone remembering that. We will be remembered as the church of God. We'll be remembered as the bride of Christ, not as Hayden Kukul who did X, Y, Z. And so that's actually where this points to in Ecclesiastes. Solomon talks about the fact that don't get too caught up in yourself, because ultimately it's about God. The whole world just keeps on turning. Things keep on happening. You're not really that important to it all. You're only important because God made you that way, not because of anything you did. Don't be vain. That's pretty much the message. All right, the next one, Song of Solomon or Song of Songs. So this is basically an entire book of romance. And people sometimes go, what is this doing in the Bible? It's all about two lovers, basically, and some other women who support the lover, basically. And you could go, what is this doing in here? Except that this is all about speaking to the heart. And it's about speaking to the heart of our relationship with God. Back then it was Israel with the Father, with God, and now it's the church being the bride of Christ. So if you read Song of Solomon's, and it's very poetic. It's very impressive, actually, the way it's written. If you're reading that, it is definitely about a male and a female and the love between them, but it's truly about the love between us and Christ. And that's then quoted further on in the Bible about that being the case. So if you're reading it, read everything in that way, and you'll be blown away by the way what God thinks of us. Hagen. Yes, they're one. And that's the major thing of it, isn't it? They're longing to be one. That's the whole thing of Song of Solomon. And it's saying, so it's a model for marriage, but it's a model mostly for our relationship with Christ. It's saying that we are to be one with Christ. We're to long after our betrothed. That's what it's all talking about. So how do we wrap all of this up into a nice little box that's called Solomon the Old Testament Hero? Well, I'm not certain I can, partly because Solomon, although he was very wise, he married 700 women and had 300 concubines, and they, most of them, brought their foreign religions into Israel. And because of him and what he did, the whole Israeli nation was split in two and everything fell to bits. So, very wise man who just got a little bit too excited by all the beautiful women, and basically he was not able to say no, and not able to then ultimately say, no, this is the nation of the Lord. But he said, no, I'm going to keep all my wives happy. And so he let them worship whoever they want to worship. He even built temple. After building the temple to God, he then built worship places to foreign gods. So he really made a bit of a mess of it. So again, probably Ecclesiastes he'd be pretty happy about, although we actually do remember Solomon, so anyway. But it's interesting, I think important to point out, even someone who was considered that wise, who made Israel as wealthy as it ever was, still messed up. So we're going to mess up too. And that's okay, and we're forgiven. So, I've just a couple of summaries from me of these three books and what Solomon wrote. We're called to wisdom. She is there if we seek her. These are my words, by the way, sorry, I'm not quoting anything. With her, our life will be rich. Without her, there is shame. That's just my quick summary of Proverbs. So go after wisdom. Sometimes it's pretty easy to sit in our foolishness, to let our thinking, the way we've been brought up or the way we think, to seem normal and right. But there's actually another way, and that's God's way of thinking. Okay, now Ecclesiastes. Don't get all high and mighty. We labour, we come, we go, but the world goes on regardless. Take pleasure in the world around us. It was created for that purpose. So let's not get too caught up with our own little programs and our ministries and all of that. They're important, but guess what? The world goes on, and God will make it happen one way or another, and we're just part of that. Get on and give life, remembering the awesome power of the Creator and that He has His hand in all, whether we know it or not. So that's Ecclesiastes. Song of Solomon. We are to be lovers. Lovers of God, lovers of His people, lovers of His creation, passionate, intimate, connected, and longing for more. So the thing, to come in tears, the reason this one hits me is because, for me, I have a tendency to try and sit back in Proverbs, to think in stoic ways. You know, I can be wise, I can make sense of the world, I can integrate these bits of knowledge together and make the world work. But what it actually says in Kings, gosh, is that Solomon was also large of heart. So we are not called to just be wise, men, boys as well. We don't just get to be smart, but we need to feel with our hearts. Do you understand what I mean? So when we're in a situation as God's children, we enter into it with the people around us. We don't just make sense of it. We don't just offer wise words, but we're there with them. And our hearts are large. They're large for God. So Song of Solomon's is all about longing after God, knowing that He is the only one that will ultimately fulfill us. For me, this is an area I have to work on all the time, because I get very stuck the other way. And so God consistently lays this on me. Paul, to answer your question earlier, what was it for me during COVID? It was being able to play the guitar again and just to be able to feel that God was with me, to be able to feel it, not just think it. So I guess my message, I didn't realise it was going to quite go this way, but my message for everyone is, let's not just think about God, let's not just think about life, but live it. There's actually nothing shameful about chasing after the beauty that's around us, because that beauty comes from God. And as you chase after the beauty and the riches of this world, not because they are God, but because they come from God, you will discover God in them. So, a good life isn't about how we discern, what we do, or how we feel. It's about all of them. A good life is seeing things the way God does and following, working, resting, playing, and eating under God, and longing after more of God every day. And I just made a little note today as I was just reading through this again, and I thought another way of saying this is in the negative. Anything other than this is foolish, vain, and dull. And who wants to live a dull life? No one wants a dull life. So go after God and he will reward you with wisdom. Thank you. It's been really great to be back with everyone. And we're going to worship together now. And as we worship, ask God to fill your mind with understanding of who he is, but also to have a heart for him.